You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. Last year, The Nation contributor Scott Sherman visited this show to talk about the New York Public Library's controversial Central Library Plan. Under the plan, the historic stacks in the library's 42nd Street main branch would be demolished to be replaced by a new circulating library, and much of the library's research collection will be put into storage. Scholars and writers have protested the plan, and in the last 2 weeks, two different groups filed lawsuits aimed at stopping it. Last week, the New York Public Library announced that it has suspended the demolition work. So, to catch us up on this fast-moving story, we've invited Scott Sherman back to the Leonard Lopate Show, along with two of the plan's critics, the lead plaintiff in one of the lawsuits, David Levering Lewis, who is a professor of history at NYU and the winner of two Pulitzer Prizes, and Michael Kimmelman, architecture critic of the New York Times, who has critiqued the plan's design, which is by an architect from a man named Norman Foster. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Hello. Yes.
Hi.
I should say at the outset that we invited the New York Public Library President Tony Marks to be on today, and while he couldn't make it, he will be on the show on Wednesday the 24th. Scott, let me start with you. Quick recap about what the plans entail, what's been done so far, where it stands now.
2 weeks ago, there was a hearing at 250 Broadway downtown sponsored by State Assemblyman Micah Kellner, and who has taken an interest in this story. And Kellner was very, very tough on Tony Marks, the library's president, and to the surprise of many people in the room, Tony Marks said that the library would basically halt construction at 42nd Street, and he would commission an independent audit of the 42nd Street renovation, as well as independent financial data about some alternatives. For example, the renovation of the Mid-Manhattan Library across the street, which many of the critics have called for.
So it's all halted? Actually, nothing has been done? Have they started to demolish
the
stacks or move any books out?
They have moved 3 million books out of the stacks underneath the Rose Reading Room at 42nd Street.
But the actual, out of how many?
There were 3 million books in the stacks under the Rose Reading Room, and all of them, as far as I know, have been removed.
So, but the actual physical stacks are still there, so they haven't started any of the demolition.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Now, to finance the plan, let's be clear that they were going to sell the Mid-Manhattan Library and the Science, Industry, and Business Library, known as SIBL, would be sold. Those are still open, right?
The funding for the plan is as follows. New York City has committed $150 million of capital funds. Of that money, $125 million is from Mayor Bloomberg's discretionary capital budget. The other $25 million is from the council. But NYPL is keen to sell the Mid-Manhattan Library across the street. They believe they can get $100 million for that. And they have already sold floors 3 through 7 of the Science and Business Library on 34th Street. The library still retains the first two floors, which contain lucrative retail possibilities.
For which they received $60 million, I think.
I believe so.
Yes.
I believe so.
So you wanted to chime in on this. They're still open, but they're slowly being closed, or parts of it are being sold.
It's not clear what is going to happen at SIBL. What is clear is that most of the levels have indeed been sold to a religious organization, I think. And for the time being, SIBL goes on as it has in the past.
So people know it's the old B. Altman building, 34th
right.
Street, I think.
That's correct,
right.
Yes.
So two organizations have sprung up to protest this plan, the Committee to Save the New York Public Library and Citizens Defending Libraries. Tell us about those two different lawsuits and where they stand.
Well, actually, the first lawsuit was filed by the Advocates for Justice firm, in which I'm the principal participant. And we are a small group of some five concerned citizens, myself, my wife, who is a former assistant librarian of Congress, Jack McRae, who is senior editor of one of the oldest American publishing houses, a remarkable community activist, quite innovative and indispensable in bringing public attention to this, and Mark Hewitt, who is one of the authors of the classic Carrere and Hastings book, the firm, of course, that
designed the original
building
on Fifth Avenue.
Quite. So that's one group, and we filed first. And that is why, indeed, there is now a work stoppage. It is not because of Mr. Marx's reconsideration of the complexities of inherent contradictions of his plan or the CLP. It is because, in fact, they have been stopped by the filing of this lawsuit.
So who is actually named in these lawsuits?
His Honor the Mayor, the City Council, the trustees of the New York Public Library, and a number of other agencies.
And did Mr. Marx and the New York Public Library actually state that they were halting because of these lawsuits?
Well, they have agreed that they must do so during the period of discovery, which will result in a court appearance at Supreme Court on, I think, August the 7th. Meantime, of course, the second lawsuit was filed several days later. I think ours was filed on July 3rd, so it was a good gift to the public on July 4th. And Mark and Hiller, or rather Weiss and Hiller, I should say, an architectural law firm, filed on the 10th, I think, of this month.
So we have a lot to get to, but just briefly, what are you actually claiming in the lawsuits? What's actually the legal principle here at stake?
Irreparable harm is the first cause of concern
to the public, the main facility at New York Public Library.
That is the removal of the seven tiers of stacks in the 42nd Street building would be an atrocity and would wreak irrevocable harm. The second is the fiduciary disregard by the trustees of the original founding intent of the three libraries united in 1900 and expressly insisted then that this always be a research library.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope, talking to Scott Sermon, contributing writer for The Nation, NYU history professor David Levering Lewis, and Michael Kimmelman from The New York Times, an architecture critic. You've seen the plans, Michael. What do you think of them?
You know, I think the plans, such as they have been presented by the library, are preliminary. What the library has shown us is some sketches, essentially, by Foster, which Foster now says were really not completed. So I think you have to see that the whole thing is in a state of indecision. That is to say, you haven't had an engineering firm which has really presented how this would be done, what its costs would be. Foster himself has been tasked with going back and coming up with other more elaborate plans and perhaps plans that don't involve demolishing the stack. So everything is, at this point, in an undecided state. It's not as if you had a very specific plan which was on the verge of, that was on the verge of demolition and you had a clear architectural plan.
Some of the pictures that I've seen, maybe you can just fill in the blanks for me. If they remove the stacks, and we'll get into whether that's structurally sound a little bit later on, but if they completely remove the stacks, what's the intention? What are they going to put there?
Yeah, so, I mean, the argument that the library has made is that essentially this Rube Goldbergian plan of selling some of these branches to take money in and consolidate the services would also involve removing the stacks to put those now sold circulating branches in the space, in the vault, essentially, where these seven tiers, as David said, of stacks would be. Norman Foster was, and still is, ostensibly designing what that circulating branch would be. And then other areas of the library, which are now not used by the public, would also be opened up and used for various functions, a teen reading room or whatever.
More internet use.
I mean, the notion of bringing a modern circulating library into the building means that you have space for the circulation of books as well as DVDs, computer spaces for people. You know, the whole point is that a modern circulating branch in New York City has multiple functions these days. There are places which are used by as teen centers after school. They're used by seniors. There are employment places. They have a lot of different functions.
Right. If you take it at face value, Scott, it seems like a reasonable plan that people who do research might be in the minority. I know that that's the way it was originally intended, but more and more people are going to the library. They're going in to read. The library claims that more people use the New York Public Library system than go to sporting events in the area, and that they're going to modernize it. It seems like a good idea as far as the intent is concerned, no?
No. And the interesting question is why they're doing it. If you look, they keep changing the reasons for why they're doing it. First, they said they're doing it to create the world's greatest library. And then they said they're doing it to democratize the 42nd Street Library. And then they said they're doing it to save the books. So the rationale keeps changing. But the core rationale that doesn't change is the assertion from Tony Marks and Neil Rudenstein, the chair of the NYPL Board of Trustees. Rudenstein is a former president of Harvard, by the way. The core rationale is that this plan will generate $15 million. Now, let's step back for a moment and examine that logic. Marks and Rudenstein are basically saying that if we spend $300 million on a major renovation of the 42nd Street Library between now and 2018, in 2019 and beyond, they will have $15 million more to spend on books and librarians each year. But staff members tell me that the $15 million figure doesn't ring true. And if this whole thing is about having an extra $15 million per year to spend, then I would ask, why can't the library just raise that money privately? Certain trustees give $5 million a year out of their own pockets. And Stephen Schwartzman, one of the wealthiest men in New York City, he gave the library $100 million in one shot a few years ago.
His name is on the facade of the library now in five different places.
Yes.
Do we know if there were strings attached with that gift that this renovation happened?
I requested a copy of Schwartzman's contract with the library 2 years ago, and they refused to give it to me.
There's something about the metrics of this People's Palace that would result from the sale of the Mid-Manhattan and Sybil and the bringing in of their functions and staffs to the New York Public Library building on 42nd Street. And that is that the two buildings, Sybil and Mid-Manhattan, give you about 300,000 square feet of space. Maximally, after Mr. Foster finishes and removes the stacks, you would have about 80,000 square feet. So you're doing a lot more, they would claim, with a lot less. And the metrics simply do not seem to parse. Not only that, but it's even more distressing and disturbing because, as Michael was saying, he's only seen, Ada Huxtable has only seen, and to my knowledge, no one has seen anything that would qualify for schematics, a schematic design. Rather, it's been impressionistic stuff, airport-like designs, and so we're headed into the ripping of the bowels and entrails of a grand structure on the grounds that all sorts of things are going to change which, when looked at, appear rather fraudulent.
You mentioned Ms. Huxtable earlier. This is a Wall Street Journal's architecture critic. She denounced the plan in her last essay before she passed away, saying, "You don't update a masterpiece." I'm happy to play devil's advocate here with you guys today and say, you know, how much of this is nostalgia? How much of this is holding on to an old building? And people love their old buildings, but New York is constantly changing.
Elliot, if it's important to remember the structure of the New York Public Library system. The New York Public Library consists of four research libraries, of which 42nd Street is the most prominent, as well as 86 branch libraries. The 86 branch libraries, according to Tony Marks, need up to $1 billion in structural renovations. The boilers need work. The windows need to be replaced. Some of the branch libraries don't even have enough toilet paper in the bathrooms. But Marks and Rudenstein are determined to press ahead with a $300 million renovation, which could be $350 million, according to what Marks told Michael Kimmelman. But it's worth remembering that the 42nd Street building has already received about $65 million in renovation since 1997.
Michael, you wanted to jump in on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think one has to step back and say, listen, it's not about the nostalgia for the building. I personally am not somebody who who believes that this is purely a preservation issue. I also don't think it's even about preserving the building solely as a research facility, although we are a great city and a great civilization, and the idea that we should be able to preserve our central library for research is certainly something worth considering. I don't think it's about either of those things per se. I think it's the question which Scott was just raising as well is, look, we have a city that's changing. You have an entire library system that's serving an increasingly evolving function in an age when the way we use books and people use libraries is in flux. And you have a very complex, potentially cripplingly expensive plan. The question then becomes, what is really best for New York City? And is the best thing for New York City to undertake an incredibly complex, expensive plan that does put one of our great landmarks at risk, the central institution, in fact, when we have so many other pressing needs in this system and in the city? And if the library cannot guarantee the public that this will come in at a very clear and responsible budget, and that it does serve the people at a time when the branches are such a crucial part of our society right now, then it seems irresponsible for the library to be doing this. And I think Scott raises another point. We're talking about the trustees of this library offering up at least $150 million above the $150 million that Bloomberg has volunteered in taxpayer dollars. If they have that kind of money, there is a responsibility, I think, to explain why they are not spending that money on branches, which is what most people need and want right now.
Scott had said earlier they removed 3 million books. I think people will be surprised where those books actually went. We'll talk about that in a moment. I'm speaking with The Nation's Scott Sherman, New York Times writer Michael Kimmelman, and Pulitzer Prize winner David Levering Lewis about the New York Public Library's controversial renovation plans. We've already gotten a lot of comments on our show page. Share your thoughts there or on Facebook and Twitter. We're at the handle at Leonard Lopate. We'll be back with more after a break. Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate, talking about the New York Public Library's controversial central library plan to change the main branch right there in 42nd, the one with the two lions on it. Joining me, Scott Sherman from The Nation, Michael Kimmelman from The Times, and NYU history professor David Levering Lewis. I have been in Bryant Park many a time, and I had no idea what was directly underneath me in the park. You want to tell us about that, Scott?
There are 1.5 million books underneath Bryant Park. In response to an outcry from scholars last spring, the library raised $8 million to build shelving for another 1.5 million books. So hopefully in 2 or 3 years, there will be 3 million books under Bryant Park. You asked about the 3 million books underneath the Rose Reading Room. Before we talk about where they are, we should ask why they were removed. They were removed because NYPL is in a hurry to execute the Central Library Plan. Last spring, in the spring of 2012, N Plus One magazine sponsored a forum about the CLP at the New School. And at that forum, Tony Marks told the audience that the renovation at 42nd Street had to be completed while Mayor Bloomberg was in office because the next mayor and the next city council may not support it. So the books have been removed. Half of them are at a storage facility in Princeton. The other half, I believe, are in the hands, or I should say a significant portion have been sent to Princeton, and a significant portion are in the hands of a company called Clancy Cullen that works with libraries and provides storage facilities for them.
I mentioned this briefly earlier. Structurally, maybe back with you, Michael Kimmelman from The Times, architecturally, will the library stand up without the stacks in it?
Well, I think engineers can do really anything given enough money and time to figure it out. I don't doubt that you could put a airport underneath the Washington Monument if you really wanted to. I don't think it's necessarily a question of whether the Rose Reading Room can be made to stand up. I think it's a question of whether that kind of a move is really a wise one to make, and whether the cost of doing that is an expedient cost. And I also think, there are, as I said, I'm personally not a preservationist about this, but I do think when one is making these decisions, you have to weigh the historical integrity of the building, and in this case, the stacks being very central to the whole sort of concept of the building as a machine for delivering books. To undo that, you have to have a very good reason, not just the ability to engineer it.
David, let me ask you. It seems like one of the main issues here is about scholars and writers having accessible research material and balancing that with what the library thinks their overall good is with the public. Is that part of it, that it needs to remain a research library and this is compromising that?
It is to compromise the research mission of the library, certainly. Because what is happening, it's not only that the books are problematically off-site. It may well be that researchers can wait a mere 2 days for trucks to deliver the books. Probably it's going to take a few more days than that. But I think the more important concern is that books belong in libraries. And even as we accommodate the problematics of digitized matter, we don't want to lock into a paradigm of learning that we may find, because of the warp speed at which the technology of reproduction is moving, that we're going to have to do it all over again, and that indeed we were precipitous. And as each and every decision and component of this central library plan is revealed to be basically quite thoughtless, in that there's an idea, there's money, the two don't come together, the rationale seems to take you actually somewhere else. As Le Monde's piece not so many weeks ago observed, there seems to be in the rationalization of libraries a masking of real estate objectives. And that, I think, is certainly to be borne in mind.
Let's talk about that, because I think behind this, especially with some of the organizations, they believe that this is basically a real estate deal. And to get one thing straight, we've got that word public right in there, New York Public Library. We've had many comments about the sale of the public buildings, and a representative of the New York Public Library contacted us to say that the buildings are privately owned. They're not publicly owned, that they're a private nonprofit. Can you straighten this out for me?
If you look at the NYPL's tax forms that they file with the IRS, it's a 501c3. It's a nonprofit. And I think what they're telling you, Elliot, is that we own the buildings, the city doesn't, and therefore we can do whatever we want with them. But the NYPL partners with New York City. Most of the funding for the 86 branch libraries comes from New York City. And so it's a quasi-public organization. And I'm not sure why they're asserting that claim with you.
Might I just make a point about the second filing of Hiller and Weiss? At the heart of its claim is that in 1978, a contract was struck between the trustees, the City of New York, and the State of New York, so that because of the monies flowing to the operation of the New York Public Library, no structural changes, internal or external, can be made without having been signed off by the state. That has not been done. And so while the trustees may well think that, fare thee well, they have the autonomy of princes, in fact, there are contractual problems here that, again, reflect the fiduciary casualness of the trustees.
We do actually have a representative from the Citizens Defending Libraries. Michael is in Brooklyn. Michael, you're with us?
Yes. Hello, Elliot.
Hey, it's nice Scott, to speak Michael. With you. What's the nature of your lawsuit?
There is some overlap between the two lawsuits, but they are also quite distinct. The particular distinctions are probably best discussed by counsel, and I'm very happy to be represented by counsel. But we are alleging breach of the contracts that keep the books in the library, breach of the agreement to keep the building the same. We are also alleging negligence, and we're also alleging that there is a failure to adhere to their fiduciary duties on the part of the trustees.
And what do you make of this halt that they voluntarily done at this point?
Rather than fight the requested temporary restraining order that we asked for, they agreed that they would halt it, but absent our requesting it, They indicated that they were prepared to go, and they had filed the equivalent of demolition permits, and those were in place, and we might have seen destruction very quickly.
Michael, thanks so much for calling in. I wanted to bring up the Donnell Library because it's a cautionary tale. Why don't you tell us what that is?
In June 2007, the trustees voted to sell the Donnell Library to Orient Express Hotel Chains. The idea was Orient Express would build a hotel and there would be a branch of the New York Public Library at the bottom of the building. The problem is Orient Express Hotel Chain pulled out of the deal in 2009. So in 2008 and 2009, and even today, NYPL has an empty library on its hands, a library that generations of New Yorkers adored, and it took them some time to transfer the contract to another entity. Eventually, they transferred the contract to two real estate concerns. So as we speak, there's a 50-story tower going up on the old Donnell's property, and according to certain real estate sites, the penthouse apartment is up for sale for $60 million. The NYPL only received $59 million for the entire property.
So who would actually benefit from the sale of Mid-Manhattan and the Science, Industry, and Business Library?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. First of all, as Scott's suggesting, you know, will the library actually make the money that it wants to and should if it's to sell these things? But also, on the other end, of course, who profits may be the people who end up buying these sites and whether those people are real estate interests that have any connection to the library is, I think, one of the questions that has come up. But, you know, at the heart of this, too, is there are certain fundamental problems of the way the library phrases this whole plan. One of them is based on the idea that the Central Library is a very big building. It has a lot of spaces that are not used by the public. So we need to use all these spaces. That's a democratic sort of thing. It democratizes the building. And I think people have to remember that this is a building that is open to everyone. It is an aspirational building. You go into this building, and the very act of going into it is reaching up to try to, you know, towards learning. It is not a building that is closed to the public. And also, you know, qualities of education and are not measured in square feet. It isn't that you have to use every single square foot of the building in order to make it a truly public building. I was in Tony Marx's office, in fact, which is a very large office he has alone. And I said, you know, if you measure things this way, Tony, you could have 6-10 people working in this room. And he somehow didn't agree with this. I mean, I think the question now will be, as the Bloomberg administration is finding its last days, it has committed all this money, all this taxpayer money, a lot of taxpayer money. I think people need to focus on this publicly. You know, this should be left to another administration to decide really how money should be spent on the libraries, and people should have a say in understanding whether they really want – understanding this plan and whether this is really the way they would like to have the libraries spend $150 million of their own tax dollars. I think that the rushing that Scott and David were referring to had to do with wanting to push this ahead while the Bloomberg administration was still for it. But that's not really a way to proceed with such a great institution.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lofay, talking to Scott Sherman from The Nation, Michael Kimmelman from The New York Times, and NYU history professor David Levering Lewis. We're talking about the New York Public Library's controversial Central Library plan. There is a bit of a hyperbole out there, and I won't criticize it. I'll just state it, and it's a bit of an elephant in the room, is that there's a lot of people who believe that it's another example of Bloomberg just selling off things for his real estate pals. I hear that out there. Is that hyperbole?
I mean, I don't think any of us at this table want to suggest that there's anything sleazy involved in the sale of the Mid-Manhattan Library and the previous sale of floors 3 through 7 of Sybil. NYPL has real financial problems. They are keen to get their endowment to $1 billion. Right now, their endowment is at around $800 million. I've heard talk at trustee meetings, NYPL trustee meetings, that the sale of Mid-Manhattan, $100 million, could go towards the endowment. So they see the sale of these real estate properties as shoring up their financial base.
I would agree with that. And I also think that the question of the library being irresponsible, I think it really is trying to do something that it feels is going to be good for the public. But I find it very interesting that Andrew Carnegie immortalized himself essentially by contributing to the branch libraries. And there is a certain mentality that one finds, especially among very established older boards that are connected to great institutions in this city, like the library, the Metropolitan Museum, the Central Park. These are fabulous things. But there is this idea of adding money to money and strength to strength. I'm not sure that that's really, in the long term, a very healthy way of looking at the city. And I'm not sure, as the city diversifies and grows and changes, that it's actually a very forward way of looking. It seems to me a rather backward way.
I was surprised at the number of branches in the New York Public Library system. I think I would have been off by tens of digits. I think it was 80 or 90 or something,
yes.
Isn't that right?
86.
Yeah, so there is another complaint that all this focus on 42nd Street and the big library, that the outer branches are withering
but
to a certain degree.
But it has to be said, Elliot, that New York City has no smooth, efficient system to repair its branch libraries. Basically, the decision to renovate a branch library is not decided at the top of the political system, but by local politicians. And so for NYPL to repair 86 branch libraries requires a tremendous amount of logistical work dealing with each city council person. On the other hand, it could be less work than a $350 million renovation of 42nd Street that requires the demolition of the stacks.
Let me ask you about this. I know people are curious about landmarking. I'm sure the building is landmarked, not the inside. Is that the way it works?
Correct.
That's correct. There is before the landmark agency a request that the Rose Reading Room be landmarked, and they are deliberating that request.
And David, with your lawsuit, where does it stand now? Is there anything left to do, or now that they've halted, you're on hold for right now?
We're on hold. I suppose we would like to have considered quite seriously proposals such as the renovation of the Mid-Manhattan Library. It's a grand structure. It's a bit smelly. It's crowded. But it's nothing money couldn't fix, and it's there.
And Michael, what can you tell us about the actual design, whether it goes forward or not, where it stands?
As it stands, Norman Foster is apparently at work and coming up with some other alternative or alternatives, and you will have to see. Maybe something they can pull rabbits out of their hats and we'll have a totally different view of this, but that's where it stands now.
But it could become the big dig of Fifth Avenue.
And any suggestions, Scott, on where people should go if they either want to take action or learn more?
I would just suggest that the New York Public Library communicate with the public. The Central Library Plan was conceived in 2005 and 2006. NYPL has not sponsored a single public meeting about the Central Library Plan. It has attended hearings that other people have sponsored, but it has not sponsored a single public meeting about the greatest transformation in its history.
And I did want to mention again, we invited New York Public Library President Tony Marks to be with us today, and he couldn't make it, but he'll be on the Leonard Lopate Show on Wednesday, the 24th. I've been speaking with New York Times writer Michael Kimmelman, Pulitzer Prize winner David Levering Lewis, and Scott Sherman, a contributor for The Nation. We've been discussing the New York Public Library's controversial renovation plans. I want to thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
Thanks.
Us.